All right, hey, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network. www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. It's April the 24th, 2026. Beautiful day here on the East Coast. It is Friday. Beautiful day. Actually, just finished having some beautiful days. It's supposed to be a cool down, a little cooler day, but absolutely gorgeous out. Just went for a nice run. Sprinkled in a little walking. Feeling good. I'm feeling really good. In fact, I'm a little surprised because the last time I started to try and run, I was having a lot of difficulties. I couldn't even get to the end of the street without having to walk. So I don't know what's going on, but I'm feeling good. I actually still walk in a little, but definitely I would say three quarters running, one quarter walking. And my knee feels good. I feel good. Just taking it slow. No real expectations. And yeah, great way to start the day, at least for me, doing something. The end of my days have become very, very lazy. Like I get up early, I run, I go to work, I do everything. But about 7 o'clock, it's like, and I wish I had a little bit more going on in my life after seven. You know, obviously going to meetings and stuff, but like last night, I was like, I'm going to probably sit on this couch for the next 3.5 hours, maybe four. And I did some other things. I did a few other things. But yeah, pretty much that's what I did. Pretty bad. But I'm grateful that I'm getting up in the morning and doing something, whether it's walking, running, going to the gym, something. But yeah, it's Friday. I thought I'd come upstairs, see if we could do a podcast. I tried to do one the other day. I actually got pretty much through it and then just sort of lost my way. And yeah, I shut it down. So I thought I'd try this morning, see if we can put something together, get ready for the weekend. I'm excited about that. One thing I wanted to, excuse me. The one thing that I, you know, so I went to the meeting on Wednesday, which is As Bill Sees It. And it was a great meeting. I'm just going to read it. It was page 122, and it says, willingness is the key. It says, no matter how much one wishes to try, exactly how can he turn his own will and his own life over to the care of whatever God he thinks there is? A beginning, even the smallest, is all that is needed. Once we have placed the key of willingness in the lock and have the door ever so slightly open, we find that we can always open it more. Through self-will may slam it shut, though self-will may slam it shut, as it frequently does, it always responds the moment we again pick up the key of willingness. That's a great reading. You know, willingness is the key, right? And obviously, that is the third step, right? We turn our will, our thinking, and our lives, actions over to the care of a God of our understanding. And you believe me, I sit around and think about this a lot. You know, what is God? What is my understanding? You know, peace, love, and, you know, making the right choices is the introduction to being in a place where I'm not afraid, right? Always making decisions prior to that that always led to fear and worry. And obviously, willingness is, you know, obviously tied with unmanageability, right? We admit that our lives have become unmanageable, or no, we admit we're powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. And so willingness for me is always based on unmanageability. And clearly, the drinking had become unmanageable. But it would be, you know, years before I would really actually start to realize what else had become unmanageable in my life. Jovi, raise your hands. Big fan of Bon Jovi. I hope he has some success in this tour. I think he's going to, I don't know, he's doing like 6 or 7 or 8 nights in Madison Square Garden. I hope that goes well. I love Bon Jovi. Big part of my youth. But yeah, unmanageability. You know, I was sitting in, the other day I was sitting around, I don't know where I was at, a meeting maybe, and I was thinking, you know, if I could wrap up recovery, at least up until this point in my life, with one word, could you do that? Could you wrap up recovery in one word, and what would that word be? It's a bit of a tongue twister. What would that word be? And a few of them obviously came. Willingness, clearly, is key, right? You got to be willing. You know, the unmanageability, obviously, when I came to this program, I had shared before, I had become unmanageable to everybody else. I had not become, I was not bothered by my drinking when I came into this program. But, you know, I went with it, right? I said yes, and here I was, and working a program, and, you know, in the back of my mind thinking, really, my only issue was I got caught too much. But apparently these people are pointing out that I might have other issues. And, you know, I don't think I really focused on spending any time addressing any of them early on. It wasn't until after I drank and lost everything, right? Came in with nothing, gained everything, lost everything. And it wasn't until really I changed my sobriety date because of the pain pills did I realize in that statement that my buddy Matt made, you'll never find serenity unless you change your sobriety date. And I was like, okay, all right. And, you know, still, you know, loving Matt and, you know, wanting to make him happy. So, of course, I changed my sobriety date. I definitely remember being salty about it. Like, why? I think I had just gotten 2 years. And now I'm changing it again. And, you know, it was a real test. And I can't say the motivation was proper, but I did it. But it wasn't until, you know, I spent a lot of time in this program really not working a great program, just going to meetings, looking good, you know, half-assing it, sort of. And unfortunately, dealing with repercussions of that, you know, eventually getting divorced again. You know, I'll give you a couple reasons why that divorce happened, but there was other reasons. You know, I'll give you my version, the version that makes me feel better, but the reality is there was other reasons. There were other character defects that I was not addressing. I remember during that time, in those character defects, just being tortured by fear and worry. Like, what have you got your fucking self into? And, you know, I have post-traumatic stress disorder from that period of my life. It was so bad. Like, you know, when my phone rings, I'm like, oh my God. When I get a text, I'm like, who is it? Right? It really did a number on me. I did a number on myself with my behavior and actions, but, you know, I was not, I guess I was willing to live with that fear and worry and eventually loss. I'm very grateful that her and I can still be friends. And we are friends. We actually have a great friendship. I've shared before, you know, I really like her boyfriend. And, you know, it takes a team, and her and my wife, they send memes back and forth about me, which is pretty funny. But, you know, it is, you know, it's really about the unmanageability. So willingness, clearly, would be a word, I would think, but not the word, right? Honesty, I mean, definitely required, right? Definitely not honest in a lot of the things that I did, clearly set me on the wrong path. So honesty could be one. Accountability, you know, taking responsibility for my actions. I remember them when that happened, you know, and I've shared before how, you know, sharing about that guy that hit me and just telling my father, I think it might have actually been my fault. And him and I both looking at each other in shock. But that's me becoming accountable, because until I was accountable, I was a victim. And, you know, that means I can't let it go. I can't drop that rock. I have to carry that around. And it takes time to realize I don't want to carry anything. I don't want to carry that. I don't want to carry other incidents. I don't want to carry anything. I want to let them go. And for me, the best way to let something go is to first identify what it is I did, and two, to identify the part that I played. And then obviously three, to clear it up, make amends, Let the dust settle where it may. But at least at that point, I know I can let it go. I don't have to carry that around. So clearly, accountability would be a big one. But I think the word that I would probably say would, after all this time, right, almost 18 years of recovery from being off of drugs and alcohol, I would say the word that would have come to mind would be thoroughly. Thoroughly. Yeah, you know, rarely do we see, what is the, I forget what, I don't want to try to read how it works out of my mind, but basically thoroughly is in there. You know, it, we have to, I have to take a thorough look at all of these character defects, right? Six is obviously the ones, and this is my sort of interpretation, you know, make, you know, have whatever interpretation you want. But for me, the sixth step is really the character defects, entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Entirely ready to have God. So what that means is entirely ready to have peace remove all these defects of character, right? Because that in turn is what, how I've sort of come to this place of what God is, right? Because, you know, prior to getting sober, and then a big chunk of my recovery has been spent not entirely ready to give up these defects of character, right? You know, I gave up, and I believe drinking alcohol is a character defect, just like the rest of them. Drinking alcohol is a character defect. I gave up. I was entirely ready to give up alcohol. But, you know, was I entirely ready to give up the other ones? No. I've shared many times. I carried a lot of character defects around with me. And then you're clearly going into assembly, humbly asked him to remove, what is it? Shit. What is it? Oh, what is it? Oh, let's see. I'm no expert here. Let's see. What is it? Seven. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings, right? Humbly asked him to remove. But, you know, the sixth step is obviously, and I've talked about it, you know, many times, right? It was all the character defects that were out in the open and, you know, through the steps and a sponsor and just the people in the program and my friends and daily interactions, you know, trying to be a better person. You know, there's nothing worse than trying to be a better person and then doing stupid things, doing stupid character defects. And, you know, those ones were obvious, you know, being called out by whether it was Matt or my buddy Scott or my buddy James, you know, be around strong people with good recovery, you know, and they would point them out. You know, what do you mean when you say that? Or that hurt my feelings. Or I never asked you to share. I just wanted you to listen. You know, these were all like, you know, spotlights on these character defects. And I'm like, ooh. And at that moment, I became entirely ready to remove that character defect. But all of them? No. And, you know, but I didn't understand how it was always working, right? But I remember going through that period of time when I was living in major anxiety and worry, all brought on by myself. And when it all finally ended, I was like, oh my God, thank God, right? I don't have to worry about that anymore. I just don't want to do that again. And I often think of it, right? I think about that character defect. And today I think it through, though. I think, whoa, what is that going to lead? And then will I be living in that fear and worry again? And I just don't want to. I don't like to see, you know, I don't want my phone to ring and to worry who's calling, right? I don't want to worry who's texting me. I don't want to worry about who's emailing me. I don't want to worry about anything. I want an open book life with me and my wife and my family. You know, my daughter's like, can I use your phone? I'm like, take it. Use it. Can I use your flashlight? Absolutely. You know, my wife, you know, obviously we've all come from rough times in relationships. You know, and we're all, you know, trying to put our best foot forward, but always knowing in the back of our minds, there's always that chance. When's the other foot going to drop? And that used to be the story of my life. When's the next shoe going to drop? And I don't want to live like that, right? I just don't want to live like that. And it's, and now that I don't, and now that I have lived through it and have been aware of the effects of living like that, today I find peace, right? peace in my decisions, love in my decisions, free of fear in my decisions. And, you know, I'm grateful for that. And it's all about the willingness and the third step. And for me, at least, starting to kind of throw away whatever idea I thought of what a God was, and sort of adapting to what it's turning out in my life, at least, what God is for me, which is just peace, love, and free fear. And it makes sense, right? I mean, what more would God want than me to have a peaceful, loving, free of fear life? And how would we do that? And it's clearly done through the third. Obviously, the fourth and fifth help us identify it, but the sixth and seventh, and especially the seventh. The seventh is where the thoroughly, I think, comes in, because, you know, it's easy to be called out on shit that people see. You know, it's easy to be addressed or, evaluated in that 60 minutes that you see people, right? You know, there was a guy that I, you know, I'm friends with, and he's new, and he comes in, and he's like, you know, I'm just a piece of shit. I'm just a fucking dumbass piece of shit. I go, stop saying that. Stop putting yourself down, right? Stop it. I know, maybe you feel like that. Maybe you are. But you don't need to be the head cheerleader of it. And he looked at me and he was like, okay. And then I saw him again and he said something. I go, stop. You know, you've got to be your first number one fan. You can't be your number one, you know, boo-hooer. And because that's how it ends. And that's how a new life starts, is we can start to be our, you know, root for ourselves instead of putting ourselves down. These are just habits. You know, I won't say drinking was a habit, but it definitely was, it had some habit to it. Now, you know, granted, if a drink of alcohol goes in my mouth, there's something else that happens that I don't think there's a book, a step, nothing out there that's going to fix the spiritual imbalance, the opening of the door to the devil when that drink goes into your mouth. There's nothing out there, maybe handcuffs or a cell that can restrain you, but nothing is going to fix that. And I don't claim to have fixed that. I just choose not to go experiment with it anymore. But there are many things, and like I said, you know, when we come to this program, it's really the journey to not drink again, right? We definitely focus on what we did, and we definitely focused on how much we drank and the, you know, our behavior and all that. But, you know, from this point on, it's about not drinking again. And, you know, the crowd is quiet, but they start to come back. And, you know, and that's where we start to try to address some of this stuff, especially in that sixth and seventh. And the seventh, to me, really, you know, those ones that are private. That's, to me, that the last couple of years of my life have really just been about that seventh step. You know, what are the things that nobody knows about? What are the things that I do that when I walk into a meeting, nobody would recognize? You know, I talked about how I used to, you know, be one way and then pick up my sponsor, and then I'd act a different way. And then when I would drop him off, once he was in the house, I would act a different way. You know, I was bullshitting. You know, I was seven. I wasn't thorough. I was full of shit. And that would eventually, you know, start to grind. And obviously going through all that shit that I did, you know, I could have chosen to drink. Luckily, I'd been sober long enough and really just don't want to drink again that I was able to kind of move through it. But those would be opportunities for people to be like, fuck it. Fuck this shit, I'm drinking. And I really don't want to drink. I'm so grateful to be sober and the freedom that I have from it, and especially the health. So, yeah, to me, the word thoroughly is probably the word that would probably explain my sobriety. I think if I was gonna do one word, hold on, let me have a little sip here. I don't know if I shared the other day, but I quit coffee, and today, Friday, is 1 week free of coffee. I haven't even had a sip. I haven't had a sip, and I can't say that I haven't had a desire, because I definitely have had a desire. I love coffee. And my mind's like, what the hell? Coffee, really? But man, it was really bothering my stomach, and my stomach feels a lot better. It's depressing. I was hoping that I would quit coffee and nothing would change, but now I feel a lot better from ending my my coffee run. So it's been 1 week, and you know, the hardest part for me is really going to meetings. I love drinking a cup of black coffee and a styrofoam cup in a meeting. That is my favorite thing. And it's really something that's part of that hour that I'm sitting there. It's kind of having my coffee, something I do. I reach for it. I sip at it. It's too hot in the beginning. And then by the end of the meeting, I usually finish the cup of coffee. And so I went to a meeting the other day. I took a Diet Coke, just something to, I don't know. It's just a kind of a, I'm not going to say a nervous habit, but it's definitely a little habit to have a cup of something to sip. And so I took a Diet Coke the other day. I don't want to switch over to Diet Coke. I'm imagining that that can't be better. I have had a few of them, though. I'm starting to like Diet Coke. But I'm finding that I can drink a little bit of green tea. So maybe that'll be my replacement. It doesn't seem to bother my stomach like the coffee was. And but I went to a meeting, I guess, Wednesday. That's when we read that story. And I didn't have anything, and I was like, oh, my God. And I really start to crash out at a meeting. I remember early recovery, I used to go to a lot of meetings, and I would always fall asleep. I'd be so tired, just always nodding off, struggling to stay awake. I haven't had that problem for a long time. I have not fallen asleep at a meeting in a long time, but now that I'm not drinking coffee, I'm starting to struggle a little bit. So I don't know. But, man, I feel good. So I'm going to pick up my 7-day no coffee coin. That's cool. I'm happy, man. I got the app. I don't know if it has something to do with, you know, it must be the acid in the coffee that's hurting my stomach. But now that I'm not drinking coffee, I am not going to put it all together, but I can tell you this week that I've been running, cause I have been running this week. It was cold out last week, but this week I've been trying to run. I think I've run a few days this week, and I've just felt great. And now I'm like, is it because of the coffee? Is it because of the coffee now that I'm running better? I don't know. We'll see. All right, let me see if I can read the daily reflections. I'm trying to bring it up, and it's not coming up here. So let me do it this way. Daily reflections. All right, let's see what we got here. Learning to love ourselves, April the 24th. Yes. Man, when I think about that, learning to love ourselves. Learning, for me, that sounds like, you know, learning. Because now to me, love is peace, love, and free of fear. It's a group word. But, you know, learning to love ourselves. Learning to choose peace over fear. Right, learning to think things through, you know, think it three times, act once. I don't know, whatever you want to say, but all right, learning to love ourselves. Alcoholism was a lonely business. Even though we were surrounded by people who loved us, we were trying to find emotional security either by dominating or by being dependent upon others. We still vainly tried to be secure by some unhealthy sort of domination or dependence. As Bill sees it, page 252. When did my personal inventory, when I did my personal inventory, I found that I had unhealthy relationships with most people in my life. My friends and family, for example, I always felt isolated and lonely. I drank to dull emotional pain. It was through staying sober, having a good sponsor, and working the 12 steps that I was able to build up my low self-esteem. First, the 12 steps taught me to become my own best friend, and then when I was able to love myself, I could reach out and love others. Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's what, you know, the willingness and, you know, accountability, honesty, and clearly, thoroughly, we start to be able to clean up all that stuff. And I know for me, that's what I started to be, you know, the thoroughly part, when I started to address the things that, you know, had nothing to do with alcohol, had nothing to do with things that people would see me doing. They were very private. I started to become sick of my own bullshit, right? And I started to become sick of worrying. And I just don't want, I just don't want to worry about anything, right? Clearly, things that come up in my life, you know, worrying about, I don't even want to worry about work. You know, I show up, I'm the best version of me, and I just handle each client one at a time, and I just do a good job. You know, the worry is usually me thinking about after or before or, you know, not staying in the moment. And I have the tools today that I don't have to do that. I can sort of stay in the moment and, you know, and not worry and have peace and love. I don't want to have fear, worry, or any of that shit in my life today. Hey, happy Friday. Have a great day. I hope hope everyone's having a great day, and I appreciate you letting me share. Bye-bye.
Yeah.